Good evening. Let's first begin in Hebrews, the 11th chapter. In Hebrews chapter 11, we are told about people of faith in the Old Testament. And there's one in particular that we're going to talk about this evening. And it's a little odd. When the first time you read it, you think, I wonder how that's demonstrating faith. I don't have any intention to be able to address that particular question. We're going to address the action that is mentioned as being done by faith. So let's look at Hebrews chapter 11. And in verse 21, it says, "By faith Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff." Very interesting, isn't it? That apparently, by faith, Jacob blessed each of his children. Where are we going to find the blessings of Jacob on his children? Any guesses?
Genesis 50.
Oh, almost. Genesis chapter 49. All right, so we're going to spend, we're going to look at Genesis chapter 49. And I've had this as a topic that I'd like to address at some point, and I just have not gotten around to it, and I felt like now would be a good time. And then as I got to looking into it, I realized there is just no way we're going to get all of the 12 blessings handled. So we are going to look at a few of them tonight. But let's start by reading the first, we'll read the verse 28 verses here. Genesis chapter 49. "And Jacob called his sons and said, 'Gather together, that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days. Gather together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and listen to Israel your father. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, you shall not excel, because you went up to your father's bed. Then you defiled it and went up to my couch. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of cruelty are in their dwelling place. Let not my soul enter their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Judah, you are he whom your brothers shall praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who shall rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes. And he shall be the obedience of the people, binding his donkey to the vine, and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washes his garment in wine, his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine, and his teeth whiter than milk. Zebulun shall dwell in the haven of the sea. He shall become a haven for ships, and his border shall adjoin Sidon. Issachar is a strong donkey, lying down between two burdens. He saw the rest was good, and the land was pleasant. He bowed his shoulders to bear a burden, and became a band of slaves. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, a viper by the path, that bites the horse's heels, and that its riders shall fall backwards. And I have waited for your salvation, O Lord. Gad, a troop, shall tramp upon him, and shall triumph at last. Bread from Asher shall be rich, and he shall yield royal dainties. Naphtali is a deer let loose. He uses beautiful words. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him. But his bow remained in strength, and the arm of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. For there is a shepherd, the stone of Israel, by the God of your father who will help you, and by the Almighty who will bless you, with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the beast and the womb, blessings of the breast and of the womb, blessing of your father, have excelled the blessing of my ancestors, up to the utmost bound by the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of him who was separated from his brothers. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the days he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father spoke to them, and he blessed them, and blessed each according to his own blessing. So here we have in Genesis 49 the blessing, if you can call it that, which really that's what it is called, but the blessing of Jacob. Some of these are not really, I don't know, if I'm waiting for a blessing, I'd be pretty disappointed in what I heard. But there's 12 that are mentioned here, and just a couple of things before we get digging into Reuben. What do you notice about these blessings? What's maybe something that stands out to you as you read them?
I guess that knowing what was going to happen to you would be a blessing.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that's about this that's interesting is some prophecy is in the scripture to prove that the message is from God. And there's some of the things that are mentioned here that are, you know, it's so clear that this is what was prophesied and this is what happened, that a lot of scoffers will say, well, this was added later. It wasn't written until after all of these events had happened. But there's probably a blessing in that. Now, I think as we read these blessings, are we supposed to understand that these things are coming down on the individuals, on Reuben himself or on Judah himself? Well, no. We know that this is talking about their tribes, their descendants. So there may be a blessing in that. I was thinking more, I don't know, let me just tell you what I was thinking. Who gets the most verbose blessing? There's two of them that get a lot of blessing. Joseph and Judah. And then guys like Naphtali and Asher and Gad, they pretty much get nothing, or at least it seems that way. And I think that's pretty significant because Joseph was by far Jacob's favorite son. And then we know that through Judah comes Jesus. And we'll talk about that briefly. Well, let's dig into this. Let's look at Reuben to start with. I think we'll probably have time to maybe cover four tonight, so don't expect to cover all of them. But let's look at Judah. What do we know about Judah? Well, first of all, in the order of the 12 sons of Jacob, where was Reuben? Reuben was number one. Who was Reuben's mother?
Leah,
that's right. Now this is going to get confusing because there's four women to talk about here. But that's right. Reuben was the firstborn, and he was the firstborn of Leah. What else do we know about the life of Reuben? The passage sort of hints at a little bit of it, but what else do we know?
Rachel's servant.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, let's go to Genesis chapter 35. And what we read here in Genesis 49 and what we read in Genesis 35 is all we know about what happened. We know that Rachel was giving birth to Benjamin, and in the process, Rachel died. And it appears that after that event, maybe not that long after that event, that this thing happens. And so in chapter 35, verse 22, "And it happened when Israel dwelt in that land that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard about it." That's all we know. So here, Rachel's dead, and Reuben goes and lies with his father's concubine. Mike?
talk the other brothers out of killing Jacob.
Okay. Yeah, so the very first thing we know about Reuben's life is this event right here. The first thing we hear is that, well, I mean, we hear that he's born, but then we know that Reuben has relationships with Bilhah, which he shouldn't do, and his father hears about it. The next time we hear about Reuben is that Reuben and the other ten brothers are out, I'm sorry, the other nine brothers are out in the field working, and someone, we don't know who, someone suggests that as Joseph is coming up to them, that they should kill Joseph because he's a dreamer. Basically, they say, well, let's kill him, throw him in a pit, and then we'll see what his dreams are all about. And so Reuben prevails, and he suggests, well, why don't we just throw him in the pit instead? Now, Reuben had pure intentions here, at least it seems that way, because he wasn't just going to throw him in the pit. Let's look at Genesis 37. In Genesis 37, beginning in verse 21, it says, "But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, 'Let us not kill him.' And Reuben said to them, 'Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father.'" So Reuben had a plan. Reuben's plan was, throw him in the pit, I'll come back and get him and take him back to Jacob. Well, it didn't work out that way, and Joseph ends up getting sold, and it appears as though Reuben had nothing to do with the sale of Joseph to the Midianites, I think, because there in verse 29, Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes. And then look at what he says in verse 30. When he returns to his brothers, he says, "The lad is no more, and where shall I go?" Isn't that interesting? Reuben takes responsibility here. He understands that he's the leader of the family, or will become the leader of the family, and now his father's favorite son is gone, and he asks this question, "Where should I go?" I think it's interesting to note Reuben's reaction. He held responsibility. I think he carried some guilt with him, because the next time we see Reuben is the event where they're traveling to Egypt, where the ten remaining brothers, except for Benjamin, travel to Egypt to get food. They encounter Joseph. Joseph accuses them of being spies. Joseph recognizes them, but the brothers do not recognize Joseph. And in chapter 42, verse 22, trying to think here.
Reuben answered, saying, "Yeah. Did I not speak to you, saying, 'Do not sin against the boy'? And you would not listen. Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us."
Okay, yeah. So people today would say this is karma. But what Reuben is saying is, we did this terrible thing to our brother Joseph, and because of that, now look what's happening to us. Now we're going to pay the price for it. Now we're going to be punished for it. And so, as the story goes, Joseph retains one of them and then sends the rest of them back and says, "I'm going to believe that you're not spies when you bring back this brother Benjamin." And so Reuben goes and talks with Jacob and says, we left Simeon back in Egypt, and they think we're spies, and so we need to take Benjamin. And of course, Jacob wants nothing to do with this. He said, basically, Jacob said, "No way. You know, Joseph is now gone, and Benjamin now apparently has become his favorite son." But it's interesting that in verse 37 of chapter 42, in speaking with Jacob, Reuben does something that's very interesting. He offers up his two sons as surety, so to speak. Verse 37, "And Reuben spoke to his father, saying, 'Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you.'" Now, did Jacob take Reuben up on this? No, not at all. In fact, Jacob doesn't deal with the situation again, and we'll talk about it in a few minutes, but Jacob doesn't deal with this situation again until they've run out of food. So they went and they bought this food, and then whenever that food ran out, then another brother comes and talks to Jacob, and then Jacob does let Benjamin go. So let's get back to this prophecy, because that's all we know about the man Reuben. So in this prophecy, in chapter 49, Jacob begins by really praising Reuben. He talks about his stature, that he was in fact the firstborn. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. This should have been Reuben, but then in verse 4, Jacob knocks him down. You see, Reuben should have had a double portion of the inheritance, but the birthright was given away. And who was the birthright given to?
Judah.
Yes, and and Joseph. It's interesting. Let's go to 1 Chronicles chapter 5. The birthright was given to Joseph, but it wasn't Joseph who laid claim to it. Judah laid claim to it, and it basically went to Judah because Joseph didn't claim it. 1 Chronicles chapter 5, someone read verses 1 and 2.
Sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, he was indeed the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the sons of Israel, so that the genealogy is not listed according to his birthright. Yet Judah prevailed over his brothers, and from him came the ruler, although the birthright was given.
All right. So the birthright was given to Joseph. And we should know this, right? Because how many tribes did Joseph have?
Two
tribes, right? He had a double portion of the inheritance. So when the promised land was divided up, Joseph doesn't have a tribe. Well, it's Manasseh and Ephraim that are Joseph's tribes. He has two tribes. He has a double portion. But yet, Judah, in verse 2 of this passage, prevailed over his brothers, and he became the ruler. So in a way, we might be able to say that the birthright was taken from Reuben and given to both Judah and to Joseph. So back in Genesis chapter 49, the blessing, if you can call it a blessing, that was bestowed upon Reuben is that unstable as water, you shall not excel. Boy, what a great blessing to hear. I hope that when I'm old and dying, I can say good things to my children. Joseph was inspired by God to this, and so he just called it like it was. And so sometimes that wasn't going to be very good. I don't know. Maybe I've heard people say as you get older, you don't beat around the bush as much. You just kind of get to the point. And maybe Jacob recognizes that he's at that age. So he says here that you're unstable as water. Well, why does he say he's unstable as water? Well, consider his decision to take his father's concubine. Sort of a terrible thing to do. It could have been the result of lust. Reuben could have lusted after Bilhah. He could have. It could have been a very physical thing, or it could have been a power play. It could have been a political thing. You think about the struggles inside this family. There's 12 brothers. You know how siblings are. We have a thing called sibling rivalry, and you think that 12 sons didn't have sibling rivalry. Look what they did to Joseph. So there certainly was probably some conflict. Reuben had the right to the birthright. He was the first son. But he may have felt that because Rachel was his father's favorite wife, that maybe Joseph would be given the birthright. And so it's possible that it was some kind of power play to take over the family. And you think, well, what? That's silly. Well, remember we talked about Adonijah. Remember Adonijah was one of the sons of David. And what is it that Adonijah wanted after his father died? He wanted one of his father's wives. Well, why did he want one of his father's wives? Because there apparently was power in that. And so he wanted Abishag, and of course he wasn't given it and was eventually killed. But so he's unstable as water. His decision to sleep with his father's concubine, he couldn't control himself. Jacob apparently didn't trust him. He didn't give surety over Benjamin to Reuben. He gave it to Judah instead. And this even extends to his tribe. And I think that's the point of the prophecy here.
Look what David's son did, Absalom did, when he took over.
Oh, right. He took his father's harem.
Yeah,
yeah, there is something about that. All right, so the 12 tribes of Israel are making it out of Egypt. They're standing at the Jordan River ready to cross over. And what does the tribe of Reuben do? What do they want? Well, they don't want to go take possession of the land flowing with milk and honey. Instead, they see this land east of the Jordan River, and they say, let it be our inheritance, in Numbers chapter 32. But after they asked for this, Moses asked them a question in verse 6, saying, shall your brethren go to war while you sit here? And of course, we know that the people of Reuben did in fact go with the rest of the children of Israel and fight. But it wasn't always that way. See, God intended for all of them to be west of the Jordan, that they would be one nation in between the Mediterranean Sea and the Jordan. That was the promised land. But a couple of the tribes chose to stay on the east side, and it becomes a problem. In Judges, the 5th chapter, this is the story of Deborah and Barak. Remember, they are fighting against Sisera. And at the end of this story, Deborah has a song. And in this song, verses 15 through 17, we get the indication that the people of Reuben didn't help. They wanted to watch their sheep instead of fighting against Sisera. It seems as though their instability, or Reuben's instability, passed on to his descendants. The last thing that it says there, it says, you shall not excel. Unstable as water, you shall not excel. And certainly the tribe of Reuben isn't really a strong tribe. There isn't a single judge or prophet or prince that's found in the tribe. There's only three people that are ever mentioned to be from the tribe of Reuben, and they're all together in one story. Any guesses as to what story that is? It's in Numbers, the 16th chapter, and the men are Dathan, Abiram, and On. What happened to them? Why are they of note? What's that? They rebelled. That's right. They were with Korah in the rebellion against Aaron, and so they were stoned, and then the earth swallowed them up. So, it's very interesting that Reuben here gets this blessing that's not much of a blessing, and it's all because of really one decision he made in his life. He made a decision to adulterate with his father's wife, and there's consequences to that. I think we get that Reuben changed. He was. He certainly tried to take responsibility of his family later on, but when the blessings came, this is what he got. Okay, well, let's get to Simeon and Levi, and this will probably be all we can talk about. Simeon and Levi are mentioned in verses 5 through 7. They are sons of Leah, again. They're joined together in this blessing because they were joined together in an action. Anybody remember what that action was? What is it that he did together? Well, I'll give you a hint. It has to do with their sister. Who was their sister? Dinah. That's right. And Dinah, if you remember, Dinah was raped by Shechem. And this man, he liked Dinah. And after he had slept with her, he wanted her as a wife. And so Shechem and his father come to Jacob and his sons, and they ask for Dinah to be given to them. And we don't know who. It may have been Levi and Simeon. We don't know. But they said, you know what, we can't give her to you, and we can't take your daughters as wives for us because your people aren't circumcised. And so Shechem really wanted Dinah, so he and all of his people were circumcised. And then in Genesis chapter 34, on the third day, when the men were in pain, then what does Levi and Simeon do? They come in and annihilate all of the men. And so when you read the blessing, it makes sense, doesn't it? Simeon and Levi are brothers. Instruments of cruelty are in their dwelling. Let not my soul enter their counsel. Let not my honor unite to their assembly. From their anger they slew a man. They slew Shechem. And in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. You know, you might hamstring a horse because horses are instruments of war. But why would you hamstring an ox? And Jacob was not very happy with what Simeon and Levi did. He said, why would you do this to our neighbors? How are we to live amongst them? And the idea with the hamstringing of an ox, apparently there was peace amongst them, save for this event. And Simeon and Levi, their justification was, should he treat our sister like a harlot? And I'm not sure who's in the right here. We certainly know that Shechem was not. But there in verse 7, cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. And then this last part's what I want to focus on before we close. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. So here's this prophecy. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. So we're talking about two tribes. We're talking about Levi and we're talking about Simeon. So let's deal with the easy one. What does this mean for Levi? Well, what do we know about the tribe of Levi?
They became servants.
Well, did they have a possession?
No.
I guess that's the answer, right? You think about Levi, they didn't have anything, did they? They had a couple of cities, but Joshua chapter 13, verse 33, as they're dividing up the promised land, but to the tribe of Levi, Moses has given no inheritance, for the Lord God of Israel was their inheritance, as he said to them. They only had a couple of cities. So they were sort of scattered throughout Israel, weren't they? Well, now what about Simeon? Simeon's got a tribe, don't they? Well, sort of. Sort of they do. Some scholars don't think that Simeon was actually a tribe at all. When they divided up the 12 tribes, they're kind of a tribe is maybe the best way to describe it. Their inheritance was a portion of someone else's inheritance. Let's look at Joshua chapter 19. In Joshua chapter 19, verse 1, the second lot came out for Simeon, for the tribe of the children of Simeon, according to their family, and their inheritance was within the inheritance of the children of Judah. Now, there's two ways you can look at that. The first, you could say, well, their territory was totally surrounded by Judah, which it absolutely was. But let's skip down to verse 9. The inheritance of the children of Simeon was included in the share of the children of Judah, for the share of the children of Judah was too much for them. Therefore, the children of Simeon had their inheritance within this inheritance of that people. You see, Simeon really didn't get an inheritance. They sort of got what Judah wasn't going to use. And it very well may be that they didn't have a distinct district or a distinct set of property that they could call their own. Many of the cities that are listed in Joshua chapter 19 as belonging to the tribe of Simeon are later in the book described as being the property of Judah. In 1 Chronicles chapter 14, verses 39 through 34, we find a description of some of the cities that children of Simeon had that they took. And it seems as though they had to fight for those cities. They had to fight against Mennonites and the Amalekites. And even more so than this, we look at the number of the tribe of Simeon. The tribe seemed to have dwindled in size. Remember, the book of Numbers is a book of censuses. There's a census taken in chapter 1 and then another census chapter 26. In chapter 1, the tribe of Simeon was 59,300. And years later, in chapter 26, the family of Simeon is now 22,200. More than half, or less than half, of what it was before. And the reason for this decline isn't really known. Some Jewish traditions believe that many of the families in other Israelite tribes were descended from women of the tribe of Simeon, which had been widowed from their original Simeonite husbands. The thought being that maybe Simeon had to constantly fight the Canaanites for their cities, and as a result, a lot of their men died off, and they ended up going and marrying into other tribes. Did the tribe totally disappear? Well, no, because in 1 Chronicles chapter 4, we see them mentioned. But it's very interesting that right before Moses dies, Moses pronounces blessings on the tribes of Israel. But he only blesses 11 tribes. He doesn't bless Simeon. Simeon's excluded. In the Song of Deborah, Simeon's also excluded. It's just really interesting to see that here this prophecy says, I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. And it's easy to see that for Levi. Levi didn't have an inheritance. It was scattered amongst the children of Israel. But the same seems to be true for Simeon. Okay. Well, it's 5 till. If I get into anything else, we're going to go way over. So, we may look at some of these in times to come. But we'll stop there. We'll cover three. We'll say 25% of the blessing is good. It doesn't really lend itself to an invitation, but we know that we have an opportunity now, as we always do, to consider where we stand, and if there's something we need to make right in our life, we have an opportunity to do it. Let's stand and sing a closing note.